The national lament, wouldn't you say? Sharon Lewis, backed up by a band called Texas Fire, with What's Really Going On. That's from her 2012 album of the same name, What's Really Going On. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and welcome to the program today. It's going to be chock full of information, I guess, as to, what was his name, that Louisiana chef. I guarantee it's going to be an information-loaded program today. Our guest for the entire hour is Charles Ortel. And whenever we have Charles Ortel with us, you can be sure there's a lot to talk about and a lot of information to be shared with regard to the Clintons. The 13-city, 6-month post-midterm elections speaking tour Bill and Hillary Clinton will launch next month isn't a family reunion. It's about raising hard, cold cash, which is their primary concern in personal and political life. The Clintons, already battling several legal actions against them, are bracing themselves for a veritable tsunami of legal woes, both domestic and foreign, that could cost them both serious jail time and hefty penalties and fines. Retired Wall Street banker and charity fraud expert and one-man forensic band, Charles Ortel, who for several years has played a key role in exposing the Clintons' highly irregular business dealings, is with us once more with an exclusive update on this dynamic duo. What are they up to? Hello, Charles. I'm glad that you're with us once more.
Well, thanks so much for having me back on, Eutrice. And I think you were thinking of Emeril Lagasse.
No, it's an older gentleman. Oh, I know the name.
Okay. Bam.
He used to say, Hoo boy.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I'm going to did. And he was quite a character and a great cook. As well.
Okay.
Well, we have the announcement made already that they are going to go on the speaking tour. And it isn't just a speaking tour. It is a way of trying to save their necks financially. And there's a reason that they have to save their necks financially. What is it, Charles?
Well, thanks for bringing this up. So basically, this Clinton Foundation that your regular listeners will know, but for those who are just tuning in for the first time, is only supposed to be a presidential archive holding the official records of the Clinton presidency that were created or received from January 20th, 1993 to January 20th, 2001. and to have a research facility where visiting scholars of all political persuasions can access those records, which are, after all, the property of we the people, to evaluate, you know, what Bill Clinton and his a team of men and women and others were doing when he was president. That's what this foundation is supposed to do. That's what this foundation has entered into multiple arrangements. They had the city of Little Rock sell bonds based on the theory that this would be a validly organized and constituted and operated presidential library. Those bonds were sold in 1998, and some are still outstanding. They had the city of Little Rock enter into a long-term lease, many hundred-year lease, to provide property, 31 acres to be specific, on the banks of the Arkansas River there, into perpetuity, where this building was to be constructed and the buildings were to be constructed. They entered into a long-term agreement with the National Archives and Records Administration on November 18, 2004. All of these legal agreements bound the organization to A, be an organization, and B, to be a lawfully organized and constituted and operated entity, which it is not, in my opinion, and in the opinion of multiple legal, tax, and accounting and other experts who've looked at this. This is instead a textbook case in fraud, in not only charity fraud, and that's the act of soliciting funds using the phone, using the mail, using electronic means, inside and across state lines and across national boundaries. That's the act of doing that when you say that you're authorized for one purpose, but when in fact you're not. And in fact, you may not even be lawfully constituted as a corporation. So to be a corporation in the state of Arkansas, I'm told by lawyers, and you can read it yourselves, you actually have to at all times have three directors or more. And at certain pivotal moments, this entity and other entities that were part of it did not have three directors. One second, I'm hearing. Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just hearing strange sounds in the background. This means that the entity was actually in violation of federal law, state law, and also contracts that it had entered into with various parties. And it's such a risk because it involves so many prominent donors who seem to have willingly overlooked, let's say, to be charitable, willingly overlooked these obvious flaws. Take the Gates Foundation that has made over 100 separate grants to this mess and should have known a lot better, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, and I could go on and on and on. There are 50 American private foundations that are required under U.S. law to do the diligence to make sure that they only give to public charities, or primarily when they say they give to public charity, that it is in fact a public charity, which this is not, in my opinion. So there's a big mess with them. There's a big mess with prominent Arkansas people like the Walt family and the Walmart Foundation and Walmart Company Corporation. There's a mess involving Stevens Inc., which is a very powerful Stevens family and the investment bank they control, based in Little Rock. There's a mess with the University of Arkansas. There's a mess with the National Archives. There's a mess with the state of Arkansas. There's a mess with the city of Little Rock. Then there's a mess with all these foreign governments that gave money to the Clinton Foundation, but where the Clinton Foundation has not, in fact, properly disclosed the receipt of those monies. For 1998 to 2007, they're required under multiple laws and regulations to lay out the total amount of government grants they received. They declared zero on their tax forms when the real number has got to be, you know, more like, you know, $100 million or more. In New York and in California, they need to lay this stuff out. They haven't. So I realized, you know, when I got into this back in February of 2015, February, March timeframe, that it was a mess. And I also surmised that Hillary would run for president, think she was going to be the winner and lose. I surmised that might happen. And I furthermore figured out that the Clintons have gotten so many people into this mess that the establishment would be reluctant to expose it. And so that we would need to go through a process. I didn't imagine that Donald Trump would win in February, March of 2015, because he wasn't even a candidate then. But I just hope that, somebody who might disrupt the establishment would ultimately win. And lo and behold, here's Donald Trump doing that. So it's taken him a while to, fight these resistors and to put some points on the board. I know, some would argue that he hasn't done enough. Some would argue that what he's done is good. But from an economic perspective, a lot of what he and Congress have done is, in my opinion, as a financial type, very good. And beyond that, he's put in place people at key posts in justice, in the IRS, in other places. Now, on the Supreme Court, he's put in place a team that can, in fact, take on this Clinton Foundation and the mess, the charity fraud mess that's involved, and win.
But they're making a mess all their own. That's a whole other subject.
Right,
on the other hand, what we have is a Clinton Foundation that during its time in office, during the Clinton years in office, when they put together the architecture for what they inevitably intended to do through this foundation, serving as the nexus of what essentially was a major economic entity, a big wheel working in so many different places and doing so many things that they were not by law permitted to do. But they did them anyway, anticipating that after leaving the White House, they would have enough of a cushion, if you will, and I'm being very kind here, that they would have amassed enough wealth to last them several generations. When you mentioned about the activities in the United States, you also mentioned about the activities of getting donations to the foundation or through the foundation from entities abroad. We talked before about the fact that there is some speed here picking up by foreign entities to look at the Clinton Foundation because they feel that they had been had. They were giving money, they thought, to a foundation founded by an ex-president and a former Secretary of State. And they were vowing that they were doing, quote, good works, unquote. And hundreds of millions of dollars flowed through the sluices into the foundation. You estimate, we're talking here in the billions of dollars.
Right. So, yeah, there's two simple ways to look at this. One simple way is to ask yourself, in a state that has not ever been an expensive state, I mean, it's not like it's really super expensive to build a building in Little Rock as contrasted to Boston or New York or even Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles or San Francisco. Little Rock, the cost of living is low, and it's not all that developed. And the official estimate in a document that, of course, is hidden, not on the Clinton, or omitted, I should say, from the Clinton Foundation website and not referenced in the what passed for audits, is the lease agreement that was signed on March 1st, 2002 between an entity, the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation, which I would argue as of that date was in gross violation of the law, and therefore, should have notified the city of Little Rock it had problems that maybe couldn't be cured, but they didn't do that. That document estimates that the total cost of putting up this campus in Little Rock is $100 million, of which about $26 million is for landscaping. Now, $26 million of landscaping, that's a lot of money in Little Rock. I don't believe
it's
that.
It's a lot of grass.
I mean, I just don't believe
it. A lot of grass and trees.
And from, from it's a serious issue because, when you're thinking about valuation of something, I'm sitting out here at Bryant Park and there's a flock of birds. Depending on when you think about valuing a structure, it's tough to say that landscaping is a permanent fixture and should be valued at $26 million. I mean, landscaping, generally speaking, is not permanent. It's something. It might be if you plant trees, maybe, but that figure is suspect. So you're left with $74 million is what they estimate March 1st when they begin construction, or the year they begin construction, is what it's going to cost for everything. And ultimately, they've declared that they've raised $3 billion. Now, why would you raise $3 billion to finish a project that costs $74 million? I mean, I understand that running costs are high, you know, salaries and stuff like that, but you don't need another $2.926 billion, you know, of your declared sums. And the real trick with the Clinton charity, with these crooked charities, is they sound like they're, you know, something that you should give money to, maybe. And there's so much money around the world that's willing to engage in charitable purposes. There's so much money around the world that's willing to buy, try to buy off or lay a marker down against a commercially oriented, shall we say, dynastic political family, whether it be Democrat or Republican or even independent. And there's so much money, sadly, that's looking to be laundered. So that, you know, it's once you set up something like this, which in my opinion is purposefully gamed, it has never had a serious audit by an independent, truly independent auditor that's skeptical. It's never been put through the stress test on the inside by anybody. It's never had the proper set of trustees who would understand that they owe duties of care, loyalty, and obedience, not to the Clintons, not to the Democratic Party, but to the organization, the charity itself. Their primary responsibility is to that organization. When there's a conflict between the interests of preserving the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation, subsequently in theory renamed Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, when there's a conflict between the interests of that foundation and the interests of a trustee, the trustee must put the interests of the foundation ahead of his or her own interests. And that has never happened yet. So,
and as we have discussed, we again are talking about billions, that's with a B, of dollars yet to be accounted for.
Well, I would say it's even more than that. I would say it's more like hundreds of billions. So what we have here is we have the entity, the Clinton Foundation itself, which has declared a total of about $3 billion of incoming donations. That's on its books. Beyond that are all these projects that they talk about for the Clinton Global Initiative, which never lawfully existed, which filled out a fraudulent application for federal tax exemption. And even they made a mistake. We covered this. We now have done, Utrice, 111 shows on the YouTube channel with Jason Goodman, Crowdsource the Truth, averaging 2 hours each. And with no commercial interruption, these shows regularly get about 10,000 views within 24 hours and are watched worldwide. The recent show, we explained that this Clinton Global Initiative that they tried to set up, where Barack Obama spoke in 2009, and actually every year when Hillary was Secretary of State, that Clinton Global Initiative was never lawfully organized as a charity. Excuse me. The projects that are asserted, there's something like 3,000 different so-called commitments to action. Those projects, every single one of them, done in collection with the Clinton Global Initiative, is, in my opinion, a fraud. Every single project. If the Clinton Foundation was not validly organized, the Clinton Global Initiative was not validly organized, it was therefore improper to claim that you were doing this as a charity. Every amount spent around those projects is, in my opinion, fraudulent. And I think subject is vulnerable to attack.
Sorry. In your opinion, Charles, this speaking tour, is it anticipating massive legal problems? And is the tour really a way of raising money for a potential legal defense? Because they see what's on the horizon.
Well, I don't know, Utrice. I really don't know. I mean, what I would say to you is this. We said on your show before that November 15th is a key date because in under New York law, that's the final filing deadline for a tax form concerning your results in the prior year. And this is the first year, 2018, where an appointee other than a Clinton Obama or Bush Clinton Obama holdover has been in charge of the IRS. It's the first time they've managed to, you know, make it impossible for there to be any transition at the top of the IRS until just weeks ago. scant weeks ago. So I don't know how much familiarity this person has, the new head of the IRS, with the Clinton Foundation debacle. But there's that marching ahead. Then we have the problem that when you do an audit, people hear me say audit, they think of, oh boy, I screwed up on my personal income taxes. He's talking about an IRS person or a state tax person contacting you and saying, hey, you underpaid your taxes or you didn't pay taxes. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is when you operate a charity and its size is actually relatively small. I think in New York it's about $1 million or $2 million or so of total donations per year. At that level and up, and the Clinton Foundation is more like 100 to 300, depending on the year you want to talk about, at that level and up, $1 million, $2 million or more, you've got to get an independent firm, a truly independent firm, to go and stress test your books, which means check, you know, ask a donor, did you really send us money here? And then ask the foundation, you know, show me proof that you got the money on this date. Show me proof that the receivables you assert you're entitled to get are money that you really can say you're ultimately going to get. You know, and test everything. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to get a competent firm. You know, you're not supposed to call up whoever did Bernie Madoff's accounting work and say, hey, why don't you take a look at this? You know, you got to get a real firm. And unfortunately, in my opinion, I'm coming down with a little bit of a cough here. I'm sorry. In my opinion, the accounting firm that was used in theory from 1998 to 2012 is horrible. And excuse me, one second. The work that this firm, which is called B as in boy, K D, B King David, boy, B K D. That work, nobody should rely on that work because it is all wrong, in my opinion. It is not appropriately delved into the worldwide activities of the Clinton Foundation. It is not properly disclosed fines and penalties that were assessed in Mississippi and in Pennsylvania against their principal fundraiser. It is not cross-checked as required, the different jurisdictions where the Clinton Foundation illegally operated. It has not gone around the world, in my opinion, and cross-checked the laws and regulations that do bite this Clinton Foundation around the world and where it is not in compliance. And so, therefore, none of that work, in my opinion, should be relied upon. But it turns out that Price Waterhouse, a gigantic firm, did indeed rely on their work and produced bad accounts for 13, 14, and 15. And then another firm turned around. It's called Cohn, C-O-H-N, Resnick, R-E-Z-N-I-C-K. They relied on the bad work that was done by Price Waterhouse and BKD. And here the Clinton Foundation has to get an actual audit for the 2017 done by November 15, 2018, before the speaking tour starts. Now, on the subject of the speaking tour, I believe, and I'm not a huge fan of regulation, generally speaking, but I think this area where you can pay somebody $225,000 for a speech, as Hillary Clinton got repeatedly in the period between February 1st, 2013 and whatever she announced for president. This practice of, you know, basically paying off politicians by overpaying them these gigantic amounts of money. Let's think about $225,000 for, you know, a speech about, you know, her priorities as who knows what, or her opinion of this or his opinion of that. You know, that's not like going to watch, to the top of his game, Michael Jordan play basketball, or Tiger Woods play golf, or Roger Federer play tennis. I mean, this is an absurd amount of money to pay a political hack, you know, who oftentimes just gives the same speech over and over. And because this area is not stress tested, because there's so many people who profit, you know, the speaker's agency takes 15% of that. Very often the events you're talking about, I think, are events where an operator will say, okay, let me do the one in Milwaukee, or I'm just making this up, and I'll sell tickets for $700 a seat. And you multiply that however many seats are in the auditorium, and you hope that people show up. But in the case of a political hack, what you do is you go to the SEIU, the union, or some other union, and this happens on both sides of the aisle, and you say, look, I need to get these tickets paid for, so out of the union funds, why don't you guys go buy a bunch of tickets? Or I need it this way or that way or another way. And, you know, this is a practice that should disgust everybody. I mean, there probably isn't the type of robust accounting for how many tickets were actually sold. Nobody really cares what Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, has to say, or for that matter, what George W. Bush has to say anymore. And if they did care, why would they be paying somebody that much money? If you look at the annual income of the average person in the United States of America, and that includes, and it's higher because it includes all the incomes of the billionaires and centimillionaires and deci and millionaires. You know, so this is it's the real average is lower than this. It approaches like $70,000 per household. And in that household, there's 1.3 people working. So you have to divide that by 1.3. So you're paying like four or five times, in one speech, you're paying somebody four to five times what the average household earns working 48 weeks a year, assuming they get 4 weeks off. And, you know, I just think that's disgusting. These same people are going around saying that they want, you know, that there's inequality, they want to reduce inequality, they got this plan for us and that plan for us. And nobody takes a step back and says, you know, these Clintons, they were basically bankrupt when he was president. Now they're worth in the hundreds of millions, supposedly, judging by the amounts of money that have been disclosed. We don't know the other undisclosed pieces. And they're going around, you know, grifting the public for more money.
But then look at the example they set. They set the template for Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, who are doing very, very well on that model.
Right. And it is sort of an argument, and I don't know that I could get to this place. It is sort of an argument. We think about, you know, how much money people make in the investment field and this field and that field. Maybe it's an argument that for certain positions, and I'm not sure I'm to this place yet, but maybe it's an argument that if you run for president, you know, and there could be a few other positions like this, you're barred from, you know, you get a higher pension on a higher salary, and you're barred from working for anybody for money afterwards. It's got to be some way of taking destroying the currency here. So that, you know, we're out of the business of electing people, putting them on top of a monstrous bureaucracy that nobody seems to be able to control, and then rigging the system so that, you know, they know right away if you're Barack Obama, hey, you're going to get this book deal. Now, how do Barack and Michelle justify a $60 million advance, which I think they got, $60 million advance? Now, I think in the case of Barack Obama, he's clearly an historic figure. And, you know, surely would be nice. I'd really love to see a real book written. You know, you can have a ghostwriter as far as I'm concerned, but a real book written about what truly happened during his 8 years. That would be very, I'd buy that book. I'd pay $60 instead of the standard $30 for such a book. But, you know, to pay somebody $60 million for two books, or however many books, that's absurd. You know, it's like, you know, me going to you, or you going to me, Teresa, and saying, you know, Charles, I've really enjoyed the fact that you've come on as a guest, and I know you don't expect to be paid. You know, what I like to do, because I just won this Mega Million lottery, I just won $600 million, I want to give you $100 million because you've been on my show 100 times. And I'd say, well, that's a lot of money. Well, you know, it's just a sixth of what I made, windfall. I'm not worth $100 million for 100 appearances on your show. And there should be some kind of stress testing, particularly when the person being paid off is somebody like Hillary Clinton, who, had she been president, you know, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama could well be president, could do what past presidents have done, Republicans and Democrats alike, and allow no-bid contracts to go, either to military contractors or others, that enrich political donors, that either lean on the Justice Department to go after an enemy or lean on them not to do that, same with the IRS. I mean, there's too much money in politics. And so this spectacle, which I'll be frank, one of the guys, the presidents I do revere, and perhaps this will cause your audience's heads to explode collectively, I thought Ronald Reagan was a great president. But I really was unhappy, and I remain most unhappy with him, for accepting, I think it was a couple million dollars from the Japanese back in 1989, to give, you know, when Japan was on top of the world and the U.S. was not looking too strong versus Japan. But taking the former president taking $2 million from the Japanese, you know, corporate, you know, group, to me was really bad, particularly given that Ronald Reagan actually was rich. I mean, he made a fair amount of money, movies, disagree with his movies, say he was an oaf, but, you know, he made money in movies, he made money as General Electric spokesman. He really should have had more sense than to take that $2 million. And I don't think he should have taken the gift of the very fancy house out there in wherever it was, Bel Air, California. A bunch of his rich friends said, you know what, you ought to have a Western nice home, and they just gave him a fancy house. I don't think you should be able to do that. You know, and
I want to get back, Charles, to the question of what's dangling, the legal matters dangling over the heads of the Clintons. What do you know about that? And is it coming to fruition anytime soon?
Yeah, the way the laws are written, as is explained to me by numerous different experts, the intent of these charity laws is to make sure that, because there's so many American charities, to make sure that members of the public like you and like me and like our audience, when they find a rogue charity, that they bring it to the attention of the IRS, they bring it to the attention of the FBI and other folks, and that a rogue charity gets disciplined. So this, in my mind, is the roguest of rogue charities. And we know from the Inspector General's report, Inspector General Horowitz, that the FBI opened an investigation into the Clinton Foundation in January of 2016, if we are to believe that report, because it says so flatly. You know as well from other confirmed reports that the IRS opened an investigation in the Dallas office in July of 2016. Now, it is possible under the Obama administration that both of those investigations were slow-walked. It's also possible that in the early years period of the Trump administration, they continued to be slow-walked. But given all the publicity that this has now had, the fact that we're seeing reports in the mainstream press that people are finally looking into this, given all that, what should normally happen is that the IRS should walk into the front door of the Clinton Foundation unannounced and say, listen, we have reason to believe that you have been diverting massive sums that should have gone to your authorized purposes for unauthorized purposes, including personal enrichment of the Clintons, and illegal support for political campaigns of the Clintons and of Democrats. We have reason to believe that this is nothing more than a money laundry, and we the IRS, demand that you now prove to us that you have passed the organizational operational tests, which means you've got to go all the way back to October 23, 1997. Now Clinton Foundation has to demonstrate to us that you are not operating outside the law. It's reverse than the normal procedure, right? So they can't do that. There's no way they could survive that test. And then what that means is normally the IRS would say, all right, in fact, not only are you not a charity validly organized and operated, you're not even validly constituted as an Arkansas nonprofit corporation, which means that you're just a group of individuals who've been going around asking people to give you money, and you've been spending it as you see fit. So, you know, you could make the case, if you really wanted to be aggressive, that you owe personal income taxes on all this, the $3 billion you declared. And, you know, we may or may not argue that the expenses that you've put against this personal effort are tax deductible. So you owe us a gigantic amount of money, and don't think that that's the smallest problem. This is actually a conspiracy. This is a racketeering conspiracy. And you've been trying to obstruct justice at the federal and state level. And so we're going to go after you for that. And we're also going to go after your donors. That's the first effort. And then, you know, if they were to do that and win criminal convictions against the Clintons, because they are named trustees, they changed this to their name, that's a serious problem. I mean, to give you a sense of how serious these penalties are, many of them are 20 years each federal prison, depending on the crime. And then beyond that, beyond the criminal issues, then the people who had given money to these charities, they may decide that what they want to do is sue the Clintons personally. So, you know, the magnitude of this, if you took America's best lawyers and you sicked them on this and you said, all right, no mercy, you know, throw the book at this crowd. You then set up a spectacle where some of these trustees who are on the board of the Clinton Foundation who are rich, there's several billionaires on the board, would say, you know what, we're going to say that we didn't know any of this, which is a tough argument, but they may try it. And you then would start pitting trustees against the Clintons, and you go after the accounting firms and the law firms and the donors and the other, you know, named supposed joint venture partners in some of these schemes. And then if you really wanted to get smart, in my opinion, you would start going against the Gates Foundation and the other people, and you would encourage the other large foundations that, you know, did not do the diligence they should have done, lent their good names and their franchises to this fraud. You go after them too, and you would encourage these foreign governments that have given, in one case, the government of France has provided $650 million. I should say a collection of governments has provided $650 million to this legal entity, Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc., that never was organized properly as a charity and which disappeared and should have disappeared on December 31st, 2005. But this money started cascading towards the disappeared legal entity in 2007. $650 million. Where did that money go? Who actually took the money? Where are all those transfers? Who authorized those transfers? Who authorized the diversions? How much of that Unitaid money went to political campaigns inside the United States and inside, let's say, France or the UK or the other countries, Norway, Spain, Korea, Brazil? These are all nations that contributed hundreds of millions of dollars, actually billions of dollars collectively, that supposedly went towards these frauds. And in particular, 2007, 8, 9, about 50% of the money that Unitaid doled out from Switzerland went to this fraudulent Clinton Foundation entity that didn't legally exist. Kind of tough to explain that. So initially, when you, Trace, you were very kind. Of all the people who've tried to help on this, you have been the most relentless and generous with the time of your listeners, and for that I thank you enormously.
Not at all, Charles. You know what I told you before? Look, my interest is in getting the Clintons to account for the damage, the massive damage they have done in the black world under the guise that they were doing philanthropic work. And nothing is more offensive to me than that project HIV/AIDS. We have no idea today, considering that they used a bogus drug company making bogus, outdated, watered down medications of questionable, highly questionable value. We have no idea how many people have died. Probably right. In the tens of thousands being administered bogus drugs that the Clinton Foundation never had the capacity to administer. So I have a major problem with the Clintons and what they've done in the black world. Haiti, you take any number of places where they have been, wherever they have been, it's about pillaging and subjecting poor people to even more stressful conditions that I think the Clintons have not yet fully accounted for.
Well, you know, to bring that up, actually, it's one nuance for this that's even worse than you described. So what the Clintons did, they convinced Unitaid, this large donor, to allocate, I want to say on the order, not precisely, about $150 million in the early period, the 7, 8, 9, went for a project to provide HIV/AIDS drugs to children, and I mean young children. So let's think about that. Young children get HIV and AIDS, or HIV first. They can get it mother-to-child transmission, but by 2007, technology had changed even in the third world to the point where that was less prevalent. So little kids, before you know the age when they should be sexually active, sadly they get raped. And that does happen all over the place, and it's a horrific thing. But think about the crime of exposing a child that doesn't actually have HIV/AIDS to the treatment regimen of HIV/AIDS medicine, which is incredibly harmful if you don't have HIV. Think about doing that. Think about allowing testing. The tests that were done throughout the Third World give false positives. They're not refined enough to really track whether you actually have HIV and AIDS, even now. And that, to me, I mean, I am very squeamish, so I don't really study medical stuff that closely, but I have read up on this. I have consulted with multiple experts, and I am aware that the Hippocratic Oath used to, one part, simple encapsulation of it used to be, first, do no harm. I think what the Clintons use is the Hippocratic Oath. You know, we're a bunch of hypocrites. We're going to go swanning around saying we care about the children, because we know grandmothers and grandfathers and aunts and uncles. You hear a story about, oh, the children are suffering. Oh, take out your checkbook, give your spare change. Money starts coming in torrents to any project where you could say children are involved. You know, poor children need help. Money comes. And so to have done this your entire career, to get your daughter involved in this fraud, put her name on this fraudulent charity, you know, is a lesson that is, it's got to be told. It's got to be exposed. It's not one of these things that we want to keep in the closet, never tell anybody about. We've got to get the full glare of publicity on this horrific tale, understand the full contours of it, see whether the Clintons will dare to fight the assault that's going to come any day now against them, you know, or just fold and say, you know what, you know, I don't know how we ended up. We're smart people. We went down this path. We couldn't rid ourselves of this. We really screwed up. We throw ourselves on the mercy of the court. Unless they go down that path, this needs to be fully exposed so that, you know, we don't see this happen again. This is, I'm not an author yet, but this is a tale that needs to be fully told, and it's a lesson that needs to be explained and learned around the world. I mean, there are some great writers. There's a woman named Lindsay McGooey. I may have slaughtered her name. But she's an academic in the UK who's written a book called No Such Thing as a Free Gift. And it talks about the Gates Foundation and other well-funded foundations and how they've made a hash, in the opinion of this author, of charity. That by, you know, having all this money go into the Gates Foundation and have all these high salaries paid to the people worked in it, that it distorts the local markets of the poor countries where they go, et cetera, et cetera. And there really is a problem, actually, in the philanthropic world, that there's too much money in charities looking for good projects, and there aren't enough good projects. So that's one set of issues. And another set of issues is, frankly, a lot of these people, when you hear more and more about it, I have friends now who've been active investing in Africa and elsewhere for a long time. They're not looking for charity. They're looking to start a Facebook or something, a real company in Rwanda. You know, if we have this global world that's connected by the internet, and it's cheaper to operate in these other countries where they're growing populations and, you know, maybe a middle class in time, they're not looking for charity. They're looking for business opportunities, or they're looking to compete, you know, on the world market in whatever they want to do, be it academia or music or whatever. That's what they want. They don't want handouts. They want to straight up beat the rest of the world with the tools that we all have now available to us. So there needs to be a rethinking of all this. And, you know, when I look through this mess, and we've got a lot of production material out there. We have a lot of slideshows for 111 presentations. Perhaps 90 of them have slideshows with averaging about 10 pages each, with multiple links to all sorts of primary data. There's a tremendous amount out there, and we need to go country by country, donor by donor, project by project, to understand, why is it that so many people played along with this fraudulent game and allowed the Clintons to milk their money, you know, so blatantly for projects that are not charitable, that are more like political and personal enrichment projects? Why did so many smart people march to this set of Pied Pipers for so long? Why did Harvard and Yale and Columbia and all these great universities allow the Clintons to claim that they were doing projects with these august universities? Why did they do all this? You know, we've got to ask these tough questions. We've got to answer these tough questions. And we've got to think about, why is it fair for Corinne Brown, who, you know, I don't have a reason to like or dislike her, but here's an African-American congresswoman who is rotting in federal prison in her early 70s for another, I think, 4 years or so, for having played a role with others in a plot where only $800,000 was stolen. Why is she in prison for 4 years? Why was she prosecuted, indicted, right after Hillary Clinton was in theory cleared by James Comey in early July 2016 during the middle of a campaign, she was running for office. Why was she indicted? Why was she singled out? Why is she in federal prison? Why is Hillary Clinton allowed to fly around this country without wearing ankle bracelets alongside Bill Clinton? Why are they allowed to go collect all this money and she's in jail? Those are fair questions to ask. And, you know, I want to make one other point. People have, you know, wrongfully said that I am a Clinton hater. I'm not a Clinton hater. I'm a fraud hater. And it happens that the Clintons are fraudsters. So I don't like that. I don't like fraud when I see it. When I saw it, I believe it was fraud at GE. I don't like to see that either. So this for me is not a personal matter. It's more, you know, the people who would get together with the Clintons now, who would enable this fraud, who would protect the Clintons if they're still in the IRS, still in state finances, still in foreign governments, to do this now is really to make a fatal, not, you know, physical fatal, but for your career, fatal error. Because I believe the evidence that's out there is so exhaustive and so damning that it will be impossible to defend against the charges that I hope are coming at criminal and civil level against all who have conspired both to operate this fraud and then to obstruct the process of having it be investigated, prosecuted, and then ultimately you see convictions and incarcerations. I hope people understand that, you know, I suspect people involved in this fraud are already cooperating with authorities. So there is not going to be an option here to win. There's going to be an option to lose. The question is, do you want to lose for the rest of your life and all your money, or do you want to cooperate, throw yourself on the mercy of various authorities, and find that you get some leniency for your role here? What I hope...
I want to talk, though, tack on something to your point, and that is, this makes the Madoff fraud look like amateur hour.
Right.
We're talking hundreds, as you say, hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right.
And Charles, not to you know, blow smoke in your face, but except for your program, which comes on Sundays, it's called Sundays with Charles, except for your program, except for this program that we work together, we do not see a regular coverage of this enormous crime. Enormous in terms of money is one thing, but I continue to stress the human impact and the human cost of what these people have done all over the black world, all over the third world, if you will. I don't like using that term, but it also includes Latino countries, but especially in the black world. The Clintons have had lethal effect, and they've gotten away with it. There hasn't been a single legal action taken against them on the basis of these, as I said, bogus drugs that they've been distributing. You got millions, tens of millions of dollars to build houses in Haiti. There are only six built and they're substandard. You have all kinds of, you know, things going on with money given supposedly to address the distressed human conditions that people are living under. And they've gotten away with it. They continue to get away with it. So the combination, I just want people to understand what we've been doing here. You exposed General Electric. It took 11 years for them to understand what you were saying, and which proved to be absolutely true about them overvaluing their stock and other irregular things that they were doing to hype the value of their stock. Let's hope it doesn't take another 11 years for people, especially those in a position to safeguard the public interest, to understand that this is not about politics. This is a major crime that has occurred and continues to occur, and it must be stopped.
I agree, Teresa. You know, actually, the famed investor Warren Buffett, and I've disagree with him, not that he cares what I say, but I disagree with him on publicly on many things. He actually, for a time, I believe, he named his corporate jet indefensible because he couldn't defend the cost of having a corporate jet. And I would just say to the public that attempting to defend this behavior is attempting to defend the indefensible. And, you know, I would, there may be, you know, you got Michael Avenatti out there, that crazy lawyer. Maybe he'll take the case of defending the Clintons. But no serious law firm that has multiple partners and multiple clients, you know, in my opinion, should take on the task of trying to defend this fraud because it is indefensible. And, you know, so much of it, the reason it's taken longer, and the difference between this and Madoff, the people who got involved with Madoff were greedy. They thought they were smart, but they were stupid and greedy. In theory, you know, the great writer Francis Bacon, the English 16th century and 17th century, he's really quite a genius, said this one line in one of his tracts. He said, "In charity, there is no excess." And I thought, aha, I've got Francis Bacon. He's wrong. Look at the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation is the definition of excess. Except that, damn, Francis Bacon is right again. Because what he meant is that if you find an example of excess in something purporting to be a charity, it's not a charity. And that, I think, in a very short sentence, is the truth about the Clinton Foundation. It's never been a charity. It's been a political enrichment scheme, a personal enrichment scheme, and a political financing technique. It's not a charity, and we need to get, you know, people need to pay heavy prices here, both financially, reputationally, and in terms of serving time, and not in a country club prison. Serving time the way people who get tagged for financial fraud serve time. That's what needs to happen.
So let me ask you to advise the listeners again how they can tune in to Sunday with Charles.
Well, thanks very much for that. Actually, what we do now, we do a show on Wednesday, which is called Connecting the Dots, or Closing In, and that is at 5 p.m., and you can see both shows on YouTube on the Jason Goodman YouTube channel. You can see it also, I think Jason Goodman is on Periscope, which is Twitter. He's also on Facebook. The name of his organization is Crowdsource the Truth. He actually does shows 7 days a week. I'm on one show Wednesday and one Sunday. And if you go into Google and you punch in Sunday with Charles and playlist, you'll get to the 111 shows we've already done. And that would take you approximately 10 days nonstop without sleeping to watch all of that. So I doubt most people will want to do that. But there's a fair amount of stuff there. We pitch that show to investigators, to government authorities, and to people who have a little bit more knowledge. But we provide all the primary links to all the primary information. We're not like, you know, the newspapers and the magazines that just give you opinions, the news analysis, thinly sourced. We're pitching this the way I used to do presentations to boards of directors and sophisticated investors. So this is detail-oriented. But I try to explain it in simple terms with Jason. And we also try to inject a note of levity into a topic that shouldn't be funny, but parts of it are sadly funny.
I want to advise people that all of the documentation is also listed, also up on the internet, so that you can see for yourself that this is not just people flapping their lips. This is hard investigative work. All of the documents are there. And I don't think it's a stretch to say I'm sure the authenticity of the documents has attracted those in the investigative world who have found your site to be very useful in helping them fill the gaps that they have as they allegedly and investigate the Clinton Foundation. Charles, we've come to the end of our program today. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I feel so honored that you share your time with us and your expertise with us. And I want to be able soon, to schedule you for an exclusive Q&A with the audience. They'll let me know when they're ready, so we can schedule that soon to discuss this. We've been talking a lot. It's a lot of information to take in at one time, but it's important that it get out in a timely fashion, and sometimes we don't have... We don't leave room for people to ask questions, and I do like people to ask questions, so let's plan one of those sessions real soon. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. Anytime, Beatrice, it's my honor to always be on your show. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. So that brings us to the end of our program. I hope you learned a thing or two, and I hope you appreciate another thing, and that is, in this kind of underrated medium called PRN.fm, you're getting incredible information that even the best in the business, they just don't have. They listen to these programs. So you are worth it. And therefore, always keep in mind that this is a station you should support. Don't wait to have us ask you. This is important. This is the work we are doing. And if you think it is of value and you would like to see the station as a whole, not just this program, but as a whole, continue to do the kind of work that helps you make sense of the universe that surrounds us and in some cases is trying to do us in, please continue to consider supporting PRN.fm, and I thank you very much. We'll reconnect tomorrow, another day and another topic. Thanks.